and welcome, folks, to this edition of the Hagmann Report. It's Tuesday, September 23rd, 2025. I apologize if my voice sounds a little bit raspy right now. It is, but it's okay. I'll get through it. It'll actually get better as I drink my tea with honey. Seriously. Look, I'm a caffeine guy through and through. So I just have to get through this kind of initial bump. And we'll be okay. So welcome to today's program. I got a lot of stuff I want to show you. It seems like when, when I have guests on, I give them the floor. And I love the people we have on. I'll see. Dr. Williams, by the way, is, man, I'll tell you what. What a smart cookie she is. And of course, you know, the Brewers and having them on and other guests and such. I just love that. Because there's a lot of good information, but then that limits my time because I got some things I'm going to focus on. And chat, do you mind if I focus on a few things I really want to drill down into? Is that okay with you? Let me know. Yes, no, or hey, shut your pile and let us go. as if we're keeping you hostage, right? America is right now, we as a nation, regardless of what you hear, do you notice, by the way, do you notice I didn't wait for any yes or no answers. Somebody mentioned this too, before I get started, Randy Taylor, please, 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 please keep him in your prayers. He's really having a tough go of it. I'm not going to give too much information out because I don't know what he wants out. His condition is pretty serious at the moment. Okay. Randy Taylor, very is serious. He's has an open invitation to come on, right? That's always the case. But and folks, don't try to make. Boy, I've gotten some emails saying, you know, about this guest or that guest, and no, look, people have certain things to say. I let them say what they say. But anyway. Yeah, he's having a tough go. So keep him in your prayers, okay? Please. All right. To set the tone, and I thought, what's that? My mic's a little hot.
All right, let's see here.
Testing, is that better? Or no, still hot? How about now? Is that better? Okay. All right. So I want to set the stage a little bit for today by this. Eric the Tech, if you don't mind, if you can show the image one and put it next to me as I like split screen, if you can, because I want to kind of be able to point to it. I'm not sure which way, but I want to be able to point to this. And I want to see. Well, I'll tell you what. If you could put a full screen right now, I know. I'm sorry. Put a full screen right now. I want to know if anyone can tell me what this is. Does anyone out there in the chat? I can't. Yeah, I don't have a studio audience. Does anyone know what this is? I know what it looks like, but there's a specific name to it. It was called something. And those of you who know history, especially post-World War II history, will know what that is. So, yeah, evil. Yeah. In the chat, I'm going to look in the chat right now. It's just a one-word name, okay, that they called this, colloquially, I suppose. All right. Now, it's the Great Seal, right? The top picture is a Great Seal. And I'll explain what the bottom picture represents momentarily. Alien? No. The buzzard? Not well. No. No. All right. This is a very interesting story, and this has a lot to do with what is happening today. And I want to set today's show by showing this. It was in the summer of 1945. Now, remember, post-World War II. Well, it was close to the end of World War II. The Soviet Union, as it was back in the day, presented the United States with what they called a token of goodwill. Now look at the top picture. That's the seal. A group of Soviet school children, and listen carefully to this description, okay? A group of Soviet school children, members of the Young Pioneer Organization, gave a gift to Ambassador Averell Harriman. You should know that name if you know history. It was a large wooden, what you can see there, a large wooden carving of the Great Seal of the U.S. Now, Harriman totally accepting this gift, hung it in the office at Spaso House. I'm not sure the exact pronunciation of that, which was his home in Moscow. You follow me so far? Good. Okay. So for like 7 years, the carving hung where the ambassador to the Soviet Union entertained guests, entertained or spoke to people close to him. And basically, it hung in a place where there was a lot of information shared, a lot of personal information, as well as state, Department of State information. 7 years, roughly, it hung in that location. Look at the bottom picture. You know what they're pointing to? See, that wooden seal carved into the back and then covered ever so eloquently. It contained one of the most ingenious spy devices known to man at that time. Again, remember, this is 1945. It was known as the Thing. So the answer to my previous question would have been the Thing. Now, what was this? It was a passive listening device. It didn't take batteries. It was like super ahead of its time. It required no batteries, no internal power source. You'd have to plug it in, obviously. Instead, it was activated remotely from a remote location. And it would capture the radio signal, the conversations around it. And that would resonate. The conversations, of course, would be broadcast from that device inside that seal. It was a complex device. It had diaphragm and all this. It was inside the carving. But this allowed conversations in his office to be picked up and retransmitted. Now, they did that over radio waves. There was no electronic trace because it was, again, a very passive listening device. So if you would sweep for bugs, is there a bug? No. If it wasn't transmitting, no, you wouldn't. No, absolutely not. It was nearly impossible to detect. Think about that. The device went unnoticed for a number of years. Multiple ambassadors, by the way. It survived multiple ambassadors. 1952. It was during the George Kennan's time as ambassador. Some British radio operators were just screwing around, essentially, going through different frequencies on the radio. And they came to this frequency that, hey, sounds like we're listening to a phone conversation. Sounds like we're listening to somebody's personal conversation. Go figure. What's this? Let's look. And that, when they determined what it was, who it was talking, and what they were talking about, and saying, well, whoa, this shouldn't be on the radio, they called up the U.S. Embassy and said, hey, y'all have a problem here. There's a bug in your office. And it's being broadcast over radio signals. Okay. So they did a sweep. Ultimately, they found it. Long story short, they found it. And wow. Great seal. Bugged. The thing. You know, the thing. All right. Why'd I open with that? Well, consider us having the thing crammed right up our backsides. Okay. And consider too, that maybe that was a bad way to approach this. Consider people attempting to tell us we're here to help. Look, this is a good thing. This is helping our culture. This is helping whatever. Kind of like like goodwill, right? When in fact it's being used against you. That to me tells you everything you should need to know. Friends and foes, whether identified as a friend or as a foe, hey, I'm telling you right now, with friends like we have, like this nation has today, you don't need any enemies, right? But there's also another part of this that caught my attention is the enemy from within. Now, we all always talk about this. I mean, you know, I've had conversations with G. Edward Griffin. I've had conversations with, just name the people. I'm not going to name drop, but you understand the people that have been preaching about or talking about the enemy from within. And I realized that, you know, with the assassination, with the murder of one of the gentlest men on the planet, that there's no coming back. I'm going to tell you right now, there's absolutely no coming back. Now, I say that, and some people might say, well, you know, yes, there's a revival in the land. Okay, I will give you that. There is a sense of revival, but the question I have, remember 9/11? Remember how the churches were filled after 9/11? Yeah. Is it going to last? I don't know. Are enough people sufficiently committed to what's going on right now? Committed to saving a style of life right now? Or are enough people committed? And I'm not a preacher. I'm not a minister. Okay, I'm not that. But do enough people know that we are engaged in a friggin' fight to the death spiritual battle? Good will prevail. That doesn't mean it's going to be an easy victory. And our efforts on earth will be marked, noted in our destination, our non-earthly destination. There are some things that happened today and all throughout the last several days, last month or so, I really wanted to hit, and I'm going to hit pretty much a lot of them. But I want to expand on this just a little bit. I love to write, and I am putting my thoughts down on paper because, you know, with age and wisdom, wisdom that's been learned from personal experience, there does come a moment in time, I believe, when you sit there, when you sit in the quiet with your dog, in my case, a cup of coffee, that you can push aside the clamor of today's world. When you start to think about things, especially the things you've done in your life, call it a deep and profound soul searching, if you will. But it's the type of contemplation, if you follow me on this, that is born from decades of watching, of witnessing history, the tides of history, and feeling its currents firsthand. I'm telling you, that to me is a symbol of some of those currents that, you know, beware of the things you don't see. Beware of things that are hidden from you. Beware of ulterior motives and agendas. I mean, to think about that, to have school children in the thing there, now I'm talking about for the radio listeners, having school children parade this spy device cloaked in this gift. The use of the children. Ah, this is a lot. But So that's the kind of contemplation I'm talking about. When you start thinking about the witnessing, watching history's tides and feeling its currents, this is what I'm talking about, among other things. I mean, you could pick out any moment in history, in your personal history especially. And how did you handle the events of your personal history? Anyway, so with age also comes, and I know this because I know the people who support the show. I know the people who are, I consider close. We might have never spoken. Some I know that we have, but the people, I know you've got scars. You've got, because with age, with experience becomes personal scars. And you can etch those scars or create those scars by loss, by sacrifice, by hard-learned lessons. But you know what? That deepens our perspective. And that's what sets us apart from the younger generations, because I don't consider it, for example, an insult when somebody says you're a boomer or hey, old man, move. I think the last time there was, never mind. But okay. But the marks that we bear, many are invisible yet indelible, provide a very unique clarity with which we face the rest of our lives. You know, as I sit right here, knowingly closer to the threshold of the end of my life, when I can say, look, I can see the sun setting on this body. I can see me running out of runway. That brings with my, that feeling brings with it a lack of desire for any kind of filter. I have no desire for self-censorship. Can't afford it. Don't have the time. Only honest assessment. There is and can be no room, even in your case, if you're a lot younger, whatever, for pretense or restraint. Just the raw urgency of truth. You know, we all have time, limited amount of time, but it's a precious gift bestowed upon us by God, and you've got to use it wisely. And that's why I thank people for their gift of time. That's why I thank you for listening, because you could be doing a lot of other things. I thank you for your gift of time, because God gives us so much time, and he demands, at least in my view, that we use it wisely, right? And I'm not going to myself, look, I refuse to let my use of time or whatever I have left in my earthly life, I'm not going to let it slip away in silence. Ain't going to happen. And those of you who know me know I'm up for a good scrap here and there. You know, I've seen with, and like all of you, I'm not trying to be put on a Southern accent, but with all of you, we've lived to see our nation transformed, and not for the good either. Consider this: when we were younger, we had this unspoken code, right, that governed our actions. We had this sense of decency, of respect, of discipline, and there was a quiet faith as well that was instilled, ingrained upon us. That what we did in private mattered just as much as we did in mattered just like as much as what we did in public. We were taught, at least I was taught, that character was forged in humility and trial, not in applause or self-promotion. And I ask you something. Social media, what do you see on there? Just a bunch of self-promotion. So I look at this platform and I think, you know what? I don't ever want to fall into that self-promotion thing. I really don't. I don't need it, don't want it, don't have time for it. But I also see something else. We, and Coach Dave Dobmeier talks about this. In fact, he was the first one really to talk, drill down on this. I really fear that the people out there saying, yes, revival's here. Yes, this is a change. This is whatever. Some of those people have and still will mistake tolerance for virtue. And in doing so, they've allowed the bedrock of morality to crumble right in front of us. Do you agree? I'm just asking. You know, once we could talk in public, and our public discourse was anchored once in the sacred tenets of compatible beliefs. And this is part of the larger picture. And then there's some scary stuff I'm going to talk about real quick, but here momentarily, but I just really want to drill this down. That our public discourse, as I said, once it was tethered, anchored in the sacred tenets of compatible ideologies, compatible beliefs. You know what I'm talking about, right? It's like drifting out in the sea with the currents of very perverse and incompatible ideologies, indoctrination, and a misguided acceptance of easy compromises. The acceptance of easy compromises. Think about that. Because there's this kind of a comfort with moral ambiguity, isn't there? For example, live and let live. Hey, it doesn't matter. Whatever they want to do in their better, in the privacy, that's okay. Let them do it, right? Well, wait a second. Really? That's a moral ambiguity. And people have to realize allowing such behavior is antithetical to the very beliefs that you're calling for today, this revival. We're told now, and then we've been told that good and evil are matters of opinion, that there are no absolutes. Just perspectives, different perspectives. That's all this is, right? And you know, that's a lie from the pit of hell. When we untie ourselves from the eternal truths that have been handed down throughout Scripture, we place ourselves at the mercy of every passing delusion there is. And I'm seeing people fall for delusion after delusion after delusion after delusion, to the point where I want to start smacking people. Seriously. I mean, look, come on, folks. You know, that's, well, you know, you shouldn't say that. Well, I mean, come on. Common sense. Are we to accept your perverse delusions as just some sort of, or is that okay, what you're doing? You know, you're dressing up as a furry or whatever that is and going out. And that's okay. The fact that we have allowed that to date is, to me, spitting in the face of God. I want to say one thing in here, too. I don't know how many people have seen this, and they're going to fall for this, I guarantee you. Jim Jordan, I think Jim Jordan today, finally got an admission, as if we really needed it. Newsflash, Google. Yeah, they admit during the Biden regime. Yeah, the Biden regime. They pressured us to censor people for political speech on YouTube. Newsflash? Wow. Gee. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Jim. I didn't know that. And Alphabet and all the, you know, Facebook. And the big revelation. And here's the delusion part now. YouTube saying, hey, you know what? That was a wrong thing to do. So here's what we're going to do. everyone that was canceled because of political, canceled on the basis of political ideology or whatever, come on back. Come on back. We'll let you go. We'll let you restart. Come on back. Did you see that, folks? How many people saw that? There was a letter that was issued. I mean, Jim, by Google Alphabet that included YouTube. The whole big thing. Folks, you see that? You know, I'm kind of like not up on what people have seen. So I want to know from the chat if you saw that. Okay. Okay, come on, man. Guys, it's whatever. But all right. Well, I'll just assume you didn't know. But here's where the delusion comes in. A lot of people on the right, a lot of people on the conservative, Christian conservatives, maybe they're already on YouTube. Maybe they weren't kicked off for whatever reason. They flew under the radar, whatever. We'll go back. We'll rush back. And you know, you want to know why? Because that's where the money is. That's where the clicks are. That's where the exposure is. I'm telling you that they're going to come running back to YouTube. Not this platform. Because you screw me once. That's all I need to know. You ram it up my backside one time. I'm done. I'm done with you. Are there second chances? Yeah, but not in this. No, but you watch because here's something I'm going to show you a little bit later. Maybe Peter Navarro was on with Steve Bannon today, and essentially, you do know the left is planning to take over power by any means necessary in the midterms as well as the next presidential election. You know that, right? That's a big bit. Everyone look over there. That's a given. And when they do take back power, and eventually they will, unless they're stomped out, and I'm talking about eradicated, their ideology, well, I guess I could be plural, is eradicated from the U.S. They're going to do it again, but this time much worse. So go ahead. The people that fall for this, go ahead. Go back on YouTube. We'll talk if I'm still around, and we'll talk later and see how things go, because you might get, you know, hits and money. Believe me, there's no, you might get hits. You might get the money. You might get the self, the aggrandizement, whatever feeling. But at the end of the day, you're sacrificing everything that you said you stood for. So, again, like moral ambiguity, it's not the highest good. Good and evil, they're not separate. They're not matters of opinion. The fact that there's no absolutes, just perspectives. No, that's not right. They're dangerous lies. And when we detach ourselves from eternal truths that are handed down by the Bible through Scripture, we put ourselves at the mercy of every passing delusion. And I'm telling you, that's where we're at today. And tolerance, one more thing, tolerance. You know, it used to be like a hallmark of civility, right? It has been twisted into an excuse for moral surrender. Now, these are some of the thoughts, my own private thoughts here. So tolerance, again, it was once a hallmark of civility because the ideas were very close. We weren't, you know, 50 years ago, there was no furries. There was no perversion on indoctrination to the extent it is today. We had similar. We had more in common with the people next door than differences. That's not the case today. So what was once tolerance is now has not been twisted into this excuse for moral surrender. We're urged to accept and even celebrate what our previous generations, who are guided by faith, grounded in faith, would have recognized as destructive, not only to the individuals, but to the fabric of our society. And think about the virtues that we have abandoned: chastity, honesty, generosity, self-restraint. Look, today's, a lot of people today call them relics. Oh, those are relics of the boomers, or relics of previous generations. They're relics. So what do we see in place of that? We see the elevation of this self-indulgence. We see relativism. We see this parade of new rights that demand our admiration. I can't even read my own right. That demand our affirmation rather than discernment of conscience. That's where we're at. And don't mistake my words for hatred. I'm not there. My heart hurts for those who have been led astray by the false promises of the age. But to stand in silence as evil is normalized, folks, that's not love. It's abdication. In my view, true compassion means telling the truth, even and especially when people don't want to hear it. And you know, to say or to claim that always are equally valid is to deny the reality of sin. It's to deny the reality. Well, it's just to deny reality. It's not real. It's a delusion. But by agreeing to that, we're abandoning the very people we claim to care for to lives of confusion and pain. So if we care for people, as many of you say you do, then we have to speak out of love, as I believe Charlie Kirk did, to help them see the error and what needs to be done. Because I believe that each generation is a custodian of values the values instilled. I didn't invent those values. Those that were instilled upon me, I inherited them. I was taught them. The traditions, our faith, our very civilization, painstakingly maintained by those who came before us. Look, we're stewards of those, not owners. And yet, when I look into the faces of my grandkids, and I know so. I've talked to many of you. You get a sense of foreboding, don't you? And what kind of world am I leaving them? Am I leaving them? I take that responsibility. Are they going to have the courage to stand up for what's right, when it's far easier to remain silent? And those videos that I saw, that you saw, you know, the stabbing on the train. How many videos have you seen where people have been hurt, injured, killed? And everyone's just recording on their phones. Seriously. Everyone is a bystander. I'm not liking that. And I suggest if you see someone in pain, if you see someone being hurt, being injured, well, I can't tell you what to do, but what I would do, I wouldn't film a second of it. I would help that person. And I don't care if I'm outnumbered 5 to 1 or doesn't matter. We have to intervene. Stop filming, for crying out loud, and help. I'm going to stop there. Because I wrote like 5 or 6 more pages, but I just want to stop right there and ask you to consider that, and ask you if you think that that's something that needs to be said. You can leave a comment in the video section at Rumble, not YouTube, but Rumble, and tell me what you think about that. Because I think where we're at right now, people love to be lied to. I'm serious. I believe people at this point love to be lied to. And I'm going to give you an example of this because something here is not what it appears to be. And by the way, I'm not going to go into the horrific murder and assassination of Charlie Kirk. Okay, I'm not going to do that because, again, I choose to work from absolutes. You know, I could talk about Butler because we, the team of investigators, were given some pretty authentic documentation. Whether it was correct or not, man, that, you know, that's something a little bit that could be argued. However, you can't work from, I always say, you don't work from copies. So I'm going to leave it there. But I'm going to talk about one thing here. There was big news recently. You saw this. I know you did. You know that telecom, folks, did you see the telecom server farm found in New York City? How many people? Yeah, we all saw that, right? If we can put up video one. And I'm going to ask this question first, then let's put up video one. And show notes, by the way, my apologies. Something happened, by the way, where I was not able to put up last Thursday's show. It's going to go up tonight. I did work out that there was a problem on the backside of my website. So there was a problem with that. It'll go up tonight, and then this will go up after that. So my apologies, but... there's a problem. I have a problem with this bit of news about the server farm. And I'm going to ask you, as you're watching this, listening to it, if you're paying attention, to type something in the chat or to type what you believe my problem is with this video. It's really not that difficult. And if you don't have to, I'm just curious if anyone's thinking like I am. But here's cut one. The U.S. Secret Service. Let's see here. Yeah, the U.S. Secret Service busts a server farm. And this is a Fox News report. It's just over 2 minutes. But tell me where you see a problem with this story. Go ahead. Here it is. Cut one.
And SIM cards. Investigators say it could have blacked out cell service, jammed 911 calls, and plunged the entire city into chaos. And we've been warned about this for some time, Dan.
Yeah, Fox team coverage. Lucas Tomlinson is live outside the U.N. with a preview of the president's address. But first, CB Cotton has the details from our New York newsroom. Good morning, CB.
Good morning, Dana. Yeah, the Secret Service says this telecom threat was uncovered as agents investigated telephone threats directed towards U.S. government officials. The investigation led them to a chilling plot that, yes, could have crippled New York City's phone lines, data networks, even emergency channels, with world leaders now here in New York City for the United Nations General Assembly. The investigation began this spring, and agents raided multiple locations within 35 minutes of the UN, seizing hundreds of servers and more than 100,000 SIM cards, tools capable of blasting out 30 million anonymous texts per minute, enough to flood and shut down critical systems. The special agent in charge of New York City's field office sharing the potential danger this telecom network posed.
Encrypted, anonymous, which means that it could theoretically text the entire nation in 12 minutes. So that's, you know, that's problematic, not to mention all the other things, taking out cell towers, denying services, and criminal organizations and foreign governments using it to run their organizations.
Agents stress there's no sign that the UN General Assembly itself was targeted, but the Secret Service says early findings show that some of the seized SIM cards are tied to foreign actors and criminals already known to federal law enforcement.
Definitely nation state, foreign governments communicating over that network to known criminals in the United States and known organized crime, known cartels and terrorist groups were using this network to run their communications anonymously and encrypted.
The feds say now forensic work is underway to find out who stood behind this network and whether similar threats lurk elsewhere.
All right. Excuse me. All right. So I see some of the comments, and you're absolutely right. Some of the I can't really read all of them. Here's my biggest problem. Who found them and who's doing the investigation of them? Did you catch that? So here's my question. Since when does the United States Secret Service conduct investigations into server farms? I'm asking. Man, really? Has anyone asked that question? Hey, spokesman, what are you doing? What's your agency doing involved in this? That's problem number one. Problem number two. Look, this location should be of no surprise, but I guarantee you, they know exactly. The forensics is. I know enough about to be dangerous, so that's why I don't even hit that. Computer forensics, okay. I don't know enough about that, but what I do know, what was told to me, and this was earlier today when the news started to gain traction about this, was there are two things, and they're very closely related. The first thing is the server farm, and the second thing, believe it or not, is President Trump's problems at the UN with respect to the escalator and the teleprompter. Do you think they're not related? Okay. You might say, well, man, where'd you get that from? That's a stretch. Well, when you talk to people, thankfully, when you have somebody honest and representative of our values, they say, hey, you know what? You might want to kind of look at this and bookmark this because things are not right here. The Secret Service tasked with this investigation, of course, they will work with the FBI and legitimately should hand it over to the FBI for investigation. Or if you want to be strictly constitutional, for the local law enforcement or jurisdictional law enforcement, even the state, at the state level for investigation of this. But since it's interstate, and perhaps international, not perhaps for sure, then the FBI certainly should be a part of the, or should lead the investigation. But in this case, it was found by an initial investigation by the Secret Service. And my question is, what the hell? Seriously, does that make sense to you? I mean, does it make sense that the Secret Service would, even with the initial part of this, take the lead on this? No. So, yes, the other part of this is, you know damn well, because that would require a lot of power, a lot of electricity. That would send, believe me, if the investigative bodies can identify a marijuana facility through power and water usage, they can find this in a flipping heartbeat. Okay. They would have known about this. They had to have known about this. But put that aside, even that basic belief, put that aside for a moment. So it's not now just coming out now. So to what end? Because look, what this server farm can do and may have been used for today or at another date would be to overwhelm the cell service. So when you go to dial 911, or if you're in an op, we'll say using cell service, you can't get through. It's kind of like a big denial of service. Again, I told you I know just that much to be dangerous by computer forensics. So you can think about the potential ramifications from this and let the experts, the true experts, tell you what the capabilities of this are. Okay, let's move to why was this announced today? And because maybe they just found it, but what were they looking for when they found it? That would be a question. I've got, folks, do you have that question? So what were you looking for when you found that? Because and I think about this too, if somebody gives me an assignment to find something, Okay. I remember a case. It was a huge case. It was a somebody was stealing tractor trailers, just the trailer part of the tractor trailer. And I remember being assigned this case, and like it was an incredible amount of money and the contents inside the tractor trailers. So I remember locating one of the missing trailers and I was working with the FBI at the time, filling them in on my findings. They had their alerts out and all that stuff. But I said, hey, you know what? There's a warehouse full of, believe it or not, Hershey's Kisses, the candy that were stolen. I've got a manifest or a inventory of what was on the trailer. And yeah, Hershey's, I mean, it was a reefer. There was a reefer, refrigerated trailer. And these Hershey Kisses, I mean, I can't remember. It was just like, my goodness, an amazing amount. So I'll never forget, if you can picture Columbo, because I love Columbo. And because he was, man, when somebody underestimates you, you know, it's just so great because you can do a lot of stuff. But this one officer, the detective in the state I was where, I'm not going to even say the state, came to me and says, you found these kisses, this candy in this warehouse. I said, yep. He said, how'd you do that? And then he stopped and he looked at me and says, were you looking for this candy? And I said, no. He said, if you weren't looking for the candy, how'd you find it? And I thought, ever since then, I thought, you know, what a great question that a lot of people don't ask. Just think about that, folks. What were you looking for when you found that? I'm gonna stop there with respect to that server farm and that example and move on to this. This is cut two. This happened today. Wait a minute. I thought I might have had a different. Okay. Yeah. You know what? We're going to skip that. We're going to go right to page two. Page two. No. Sorry. Page three and thread. /thread3. Susan Crabtree had just a tremendous post. I think I might have commented on X and might have commented forward. Had a tremendous post there about the escalator incident at the UN today. Folks, did you hear about this? And you know, look, President Trump made a joke about it and say, he said, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, I stopped these wars. I did this and did that. And what do I get for it? You guys can't even stop the escalator stopped. And hell, I can't even get a working teleprompter. Right. I mean, that's what he said. He made jokes about it. And I thought, wait a second. The person that called me about the server farm, who knows. He said, ask these questions and, you know, you'll get some answers. And we also talked about the teleprompter and the escalator. And he did say this. He said, don't believe everything you see or ask questions to about certain incidents. And even if they appear humorous or just, you know, whatever, ask questions. So Susan Crabtree beat me far to the punch. And she writes this, and it's on your screen. Why did the Secret Service allow President Trump and Melania to get stalled on an escalator today at the UN General Assembly before a speech without moving quickly to protect the leader in the free world and his wife? Beautiful question. Friggin' beautiful question. Because if you look at it from a higher level, what was the Secret Service's response? He and his wife step foot on the escalator, and almost at that exact moment, that escalator stops. It wasn't a third of the way. It wasn't three quarters. No, it was like almost at that exact moment. In our conversation, again, this conversation we had was very simple. He said, you know, actually, Susan Crabtree, she could have been listening. I mean, the stalled escalator, and I'm quoting from Susan Crabtree, and you can follow her on Twitter, X, whatever. The stalled escalator of President Trump and First Lady Melania stuck. It was a classic setup for an assassination hit. Abso-friggin-lutely. Don't just pass this off as something, as like a nothing, as a, kind of like a postscript, a footnote. No. The Secret Service barely responded. They didn't pull POTUS and FLOTUS off the suddenly stopped stairs. No. So while Trump and his Justice Department bonding and the Secret Service celebrate the conviction, oh, surprise, surprise, of Ryan Ruth, you know that guy, 63 days after Butler shot at President, or was perched at President Trump's Florida golf course. Ukraine guy. So, while they celebrated his conviction today, which, boy, I was following that trial, but let me tell you something. It really wasn't a trial. It was just, it was almost like a, what do they call those? The legal name escapes me. I apologize, but it really wasn't a trial. It was a zoo circus. It was BS. But anyway, you look at the president's security team and you have to ask questions. What the hell was going on there? I mean, especially in light of the past, well, in light of the last year, ask questions. I mean, seriously, you're okay with that? The stalled escalator? And, oh, yeah, it happens. Yeah, it does happen. Just not like that. And, hey, she might have sources, because sources in the person I spoke with was very concerned about what they saw. And this is an active source. I'll say that this person is active in the Secret Service. He is not on the presidential protective detail. However, he's with us. He's close enough to that detail anyway. But they're very concerned about what they saw today. So nothing has been fixed. And this is where I break from Susan. Although, again, it's very good. Katie Pavlich also mentioned this, but the Secret Service has not been fixed. Nothing has been fixed. The FBI, the Department of Justice, again, you folks ask us, where are the convictions? Where are the where are the indictments? Where are the grand juries and the indictments? I spent my entire career doing investigations, whether it was an active, multifaceted, different types of investigations. And I was responsible to have my create a report and do it swiftly, and then give it to, in the private sector, you give it to my client. And my clients were pretty much Fortune 500 companies or Fortune 100 companies, as toward the second half of my career, or the district attorney or U.S. attorney. So, or the FBI / Department of Justice. Okay. So I would have to write a report and then give it to those people. And it wasn't like, no, they didn't want it next week. They wanted it now. Maybe I'm dating myself. Maybe this is when there were certain standards, but I say this because nothing has changed. We're asking the same questions we asked under the Biden regime. Where are the perp walks? Where's the justice in the criminal justice system? I'm just saying. So when I look at the Secret Service, when I get a call and we have a conversation like this with this source who's active in law enforcement, active in the Secret Service, and they say, look, there's something really wrong here. Something very wrong. You better pay attention. Here's video two. Go ahead. This is President Trump's reaction, because also today, and I question this too, in the course of events, and there were other things that happened that were not made public. I'm not going to do it. If somebody else does it, that's fine. But other things that happened that tell me maybe somebody didn't think he was going to give that speech, that address to the UN. And by the way, there's some really good one-liners he gave. Just saying. He's pissing a lot of people off. To me, he's like, this go-round, no filter. Now, look, you don't have to like him. I'm just saying, these are my observations of the man. Okay, but here's his reaction to the escalator, the teleprompter, and all this other stuff. Again, you don't have to like the guy. You just listen to what he says. And should we treat this? Should this be treated so casually? I don't know. Here it is. Cut to.
Very much appreciated.
This is when it's teleprompter.
I don't mind making this speech without a teleprompter, because the teleprompter is not working. I feel very happy to be up here with you, nevertheless. And that way you speak more from the heart. I can only say that whoever's operating this teleprompter is in big trouble.
You can cut that. That's fine. There's some, again, I don't have a good feeling about this, especially in the wake of the recent events that I just don't have a good feeling about this, because now people are standing up, especially after what happened on September 10th. People are now standing up and demanding accountability. OK, more so than they have in the past. So there is pressure on. You know how you have pressure points, right? You could take someone down. If you know the proper pressure point, you could take a person down very quickly. That's what I think in the larger sense of what we're seeing right now. Now, the people, the conservative Christians, the people who have not really spoken up before the beginning of September 10th, now are going for those pressure points. And that is creating a different environment. Because if you're in the Department of Justice, if you're in the FBI, Secret Service, now there's a level, one level higher of accountability than there was on September 8th or 9th. I'm just saying. So just think about things. And here's Steve Bannon. This is cut three. This is a minute and a quarter, minute and 25. The escalator stops exactly when Trump steps on it. Now, here's his view of this. He's got a view. I've got a view. You have perhaps a view or don't care. But the fact is, we are not taking care of the business we need to take care of. Here's Steve Bannon, cut two.
Or video. Cut it's, three. It's shocking. Another security breach. This is not the Secret Service problem, but another security breach right there. Of course, Gateway's always getting the buried lead. And the Escalade, as soon as he steps on it, it stops. Come on, man. It's ridiculous. And as soon as he, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the reporting says the teleprompter worked for Lula and the others. President Trump gets out there. He says right when he gets up there, the teleprompter is not working. I got to read this, but I'll do it. I'll give it from the heart, which I'd rather have him just give it from the heart than re-prepare remarks. But it's not. Listen, there are no coincidences. They're trying to mess with him afterwards, the Bolsonaro guys told me when Bolsonaro's there, because Brazil always, traditionally always goes first. They were supposed to have a car service pick him up in his security, and they never sent it. He had to hustle up from his hotel and just barely got there. Got there, in fact, a few minutes late. The UN thinks they're cute. They think they're cute. Hey, how about this? Why don't we pull all the money, not just from the dog and pony show in New York. That's the main stage. I'm talking about from Geneva. Pull it all. Every penny of it. We don't need it. We don't want it. The CCP runs it. A bunch of incompetence from the second and third world, always being big shots. Don't care about the Security Council. Walk away from all of it and shut it down. If you're going to shut down a rural hospital, let's shut down Geneva and the United Nations first. How about that?
So here's what I say to all of you and to everyone who cares. Dig a little deeper, please. Because, again, you can comment on this, that they're messing with him. There's something a little bit more going on here, and I'll tell you why. Because once you start digging, and once you start paying attention to the digital footprints of certain suspects and things, you find things. Now, today is Tuesday, right? So that happened Tuesday today. So when you start digging, guess what? Eric the Tech, if you can put up, let's see. This would be page 2. Sunday's London Times. Not that hard, folks. If you pay attention, this is page 2 in the show notes, or page, I don't know, page 2, yeah. Sunday's London Times. Now, this is part of a larger article. To mark Trump's arrival, UN staff members have joked that they may turn off the escalators and elevators and simply tell him they ran out of money, so he's got to walk up the stairs. Okay, is that funny to anyone? It's kind of like reading Discord or other message forums on the internet by that transsexual that is guilty of murdering Charlie Kirk, or is alleged to have murdered Charlie Kirk. Yeah, you think you sure about what you're reading? And if it is authentic, are you sure, for example, of the intent behind it? So if others can find this London Times remark, wouldn't your protection detail, just asking, kind of watch, you know, what's going on at the escalators? Because, hey, there could be, this isn't a joke. This isn't a ha-ha. Took away some funding. Well, we're going to get, no, this is bigger than that. I'm telling you right now. And if you think, okay, wait a second, this is all bullshit. You're wasting my time. No, there's something more coming. And I'm going to tell you now, I'm going to give you the grit here. You realize, everyone realizes that we all, that the Christian community, the Christians especially, the conservative Christians, and then conservatives, but Christians, Christian conservatives, conservatives, we're all in the crosshairs of an enemy. But this enemy didn't just appear, obviously, did not just appear. They've been here forever. And what's our enemy look like? Well, we've got numerous enemies. You have the indigenous people born here in the U.S. who have been indoctrinated by Marxism, by whatever ideology that is antithetical to our way of life and our constitution and our faith, right? That's kind of one enemy. And then you've got the Islamic component, the Islamic enemy, which a lot, I'm telling you, it hasn't gone away. It's only grown. And then you have the Democratic Socialists of America / Marxist enemy. And then you've got other people and entities, NGOs and such, I mean, the number of enemies that we have living and breathing and working off of the United States is beyond measure. I mean, I can't believe. Well, I can, but it's so you've got to take a look not at just one, but all of them. And yes, yes, I will say this too. As I talk about the Muslim faith, it's not really a faith. It is a political system. You know this. I know this. It's a political system that when invited in your house, they want to own your house and kick you out or kill you. That's just the way it is. They've said this. Can it be said of the same of the Zionists? Okay, yes, it can be. I'm laying it all out here. But you know, the intent, for example, the initial intent of our Secret Service protection, our interstate law enforcement agency, that being the FBI, it wasn't what it is now. It evolved over time and not for the better. So I will say this too as well with respect to the Zionist, which I reference as the Nation State of Israel, their arm, their political arm, much like I talk about the CIA, I talk about Mossad, but it's not really all of Mossad. It's like the John Brennans of the CIA over on that side. I mean, they're all, look, every place is just infiltrated with evil. It's not just because I mentioned that I'm not anti-Semitic. Just because I mentioned about the threat from Islam, I'm not an Islamophobe. I don't fear them. Irrationally fear them. I've got a rational fear, and we all should. Concern, a rational concern. So let me go into this because this all does connect. Let me go right into this here. And I had a little trouble, folks. I had a little trouble trying to put all this together because there's just so much information. So do please consult the show notes because I'm not going to get to all of this. Let's go to. From that, let's go to video four, cut four. I want you to take a look at this as kind of like an introduction to this foe that's already in the U.S. And that is the Muslims that are attempting to change our laws, change our lifestyles, and to not assimilate, but to dominate and to kill. Let us not, as I mentioned at the opening, let us not make the mistake of tolerating or accepting what we cannot live with. We cannot live with our enemies, especially these kind of enemies. So we're going to go to cut four and let this sink in for a second. It's just a minute long, but oh my goodness, how many people know this? This is cut four. Here it is.
Mayor of Hamtramck, Michigan, Muslim. Mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, Muslim. Mayor of Richardson, Texas, Muslim. Vice President of the Minneapolis City Council, Muslim. U.S. House Representative, Muslim. U.S. House Representative, Muslim. U.S. House Representative, Muslim. New York City mayoral candidate, Muslim. Minneapolis mayor candidate, Muslim. Islam is the third largest religion in the United. Around 6 to 8 million Muslims in U.S. 2,769 mosques were counted in the 2020 U.S. Mosque Survey. The number of mosques has nearly tripled since 2000. Around 300 Islamic schools in the U.S. About 30,000 Americans convert to Islam per year. In 2023, Muslims became the majority in Dearborn, making up approximately 55% of the city's 110,000 residents. Major urban centers, especially in New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, Detroit, and Washington, D.C., conversion to Islam in large cities and in prisons have also contributed to its growth over the years. New Jersey has the largest Muslim population by percentage, with 3% of the total population being Muslim.
Okay, that's just kind of like a minute of, hey, we're in the crap. Okay, we are in the soup here, because again, understand the intent of those who have been elected. Okay, as a matter of fact, let's see here. Let's go to cut eight. This is only 37 seconds long. When they tell you what they intend to do. Believe them. This is cut eight. This is Dearborn, Michigan, which was mentioned in that earlier clip. Listen to this. Watch this. Here it is. Cut eight.
Achieved the victory. We haven't done anywhere near enough. And the people here, I promise you, we do feel ashamed. We do feel like we're not doing enough. We do feel like change needs to come, because change must come. And in the form that it must come is that this empire, the American empire, that's been hurting our people since the beginning, the imperial Western powers that have been hurting our people since the beginning, they must fall. And inshallah, inshallah, they will fall. And my message to the people of Gaza and the oppressed peoples across the world is that there are people here, both young and old, who are going to be willing to fight and are willing to put their lives and everything they can on the line to bring these empires down, because they must come down.
So, okay, we're going to move quickly to cut nine. I'm just giving Eric you a heads up. So they're here saying America must fall. Now, we have, I don't know that person, okay? I don't know whether he was born here, whether he came here. I don't know. But the fact is, the indoctrination of many, especially on the left, the acceptance, the ready acceptance of the misguided belief that, hey, we can assimilate, we can get along, we can coexist. It's a bunch of crap. And you know what? We cannot live side by side with these people. Yet, here's what happened in Minneapolis. You know, everyone knows this, but we need to make sure people really understand. You know something. I know a lot. But do I understand a lot of what I know or everything? No, I don't. But this should give you some a cause to pause here. This is cut nine. Or wait, yeah, cut nine. This is the mayor, which we know, okay? We know about this guy of Minneapolis. But I ask you, how in the fuck do we allow this to get this way? And I know people on the left, political left. I know Christians who are saying, oh, hey, look, it's okay. No, this is not okay in America. This is cut nine. Go ahead.
Maaga Egawa Jacob Fry, Doke Magalada, Minneapolis. Damaan Sha'abka Somaliyed. Kayamid Mogadishu, Geroe, Hargeisa, Bosaso, Bedabo, Kismayo, Wahan Rabah in An Idin Shego, Minneapolis, Wa Magaladina, Wahad Kamid Tihin Laf Dabarka, Magaladan Ka Digesa, Boshado, Isku Duban.
All right. Enough of that. I can't take it. Thank you. So that's the mayor of Minneapolis, right? Did I get that right? Yeah, Jacob Fry. Okay. So in case you are wondering, this has been published many times. This is a, where'd it go? Well, we'll go to video 10 real quick, because video 10, this is a discussion about with the operatives of the Council on American Islamic Relations, CAIR, C-A-I-R. You know about CAIR, but listen to this conversation, and this is cut 10. It's a minute 25. Here it is.
We're reaching out with service ahead of power, and that all of us deserve power in this nation, which we, you know, govern together. I think maybe not in the next 1 year or 2 years or 5 years, but in the next 100 years.
You can see, you know, where you might expect it in California, in New Jersey, which has the most elected Muslim officials, in Minnesota, elsewhere. There are other states where, you know, we can see, like Florida. There's just one elected Muslim official we could identify. And I know for a fact that there are thousands, tens of thousands of Muslims in Florida, and we can do a better job. So I look at this nationwide picture. And for me, it really, it paints a picture of, you know, you climb a mountain and you say, yes, I have success. A year ago, we tracked 189. We now had nearly a 20% increase. We're at 235. But you look yonder, and there are greater peaks to, you know, get to. And so we're excited to display this information. But at the same time, we view this as a challenge. There needs to be more than one Muslim elected official in Oklahoma, Colorado, Arizona, everyone.
So that should give you a taste of what is being discussed behind the scenes. That might have been, I'm not sure where I grabbed that from. But you can see what they're planning. So let's go to this next, and everyone should know this, but let's make sure people that don't know this understand this. This is a page or image number 4. There are 3 phases of Islamic integration, and integration is the wrong word to use. 3 phases of Muslim immigration, integration, whatever. Here it is. Yeah, on my screen here. Okay. Phase 1, there are a limited number, and they claim to be oppressed. They play the victim. You've heard this before. Oh, you're Islamophobic. You've got to be more tolerant. There's that word tolerance. We're in this position today because we've been tolerant of what we should never be tolerant of. We've been tolerant of evil. We've been tolerant of everything that is perverse. And we've been tolerant of this bill of goods sold to us. Okay. Now, phase 2 is they have a bigger majority. And they have more people here. They become threatening. We see this in Dearborn where they blast the call to prayer 5 times a day. It echoes in subdivisions. We see it elsewhere as well. You see it in New York City, especially with the Islamic police. Yes, they use the cars that are made to look like NYPD cars. Yes, they do exist. And yes, they enforce Sharia law, or at least they attempt to, or remind people, you know, wink, wink, nudge, 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 kind of like the mob used to do. It'd be a shame if your business burned down. That's what they're doing right now. They're threatening, they're demanding Sharia law, and they're intolerant of Christians, especially Christians, and especially Christians who speak up. And then phase 3 is having the majority, which the CARE and others are going for. The militant section, I mean, now the heads will roll, literally. You either comply with Sharia law or we will kill you. And you either convert or we will kill you. The reason I have this up here, well, the last line says a lot. For the 1,400 years, this pattern hasn't changed. Moderates are irrelevant. Now, think about this. The biggest party to propel this ideology is the Democratic Socialists of America, which is a subcomponent of the Democrats or Democratic Left or progressives, whatever you want to call them. The DSA. Our members of the DSA include like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Omar, the Squad. Okay. They're in our government. Understand right now we are being taken over by this. So you have got a Marxist ideology now joining, or I shouldn't say now, joining with, at least visibly joining with the Muslims. I'm just going to drop one name here. You can do your own research. Corey Mills, period. Now joining with the Muslims for a complete takeover. First communities, next states, next the country. Please don't look. There is a marriage of ideologies. The Islamic, that playbook right there was laid out in documents from 1991. But that playbook, of course, has been forever, as long as Islam has existed. But what's new in America is that to achieve an end using these means, the Marxists, the Democratic Socialists will, in fact, side with Islam, demand tolerance, demand coexistence, and vice versa. But the problem is, with Islam, once they achieve a majority, they don't need you anymore. That's the problem. And you know what's funny about this? And how many people laugh because you know the truth. You know these homosexuals, these lesbians, these trans, these furries, these perverse ideologies, the beliefs, the people, you know, with especially with the nose rings and the tats and the pink hair. And they're perverse in their sexual preferences. They're pushing for all of this, not knowing they're going to be cannon fodder when they achieve their goals. It's ridiculous, but that's how deep the indoctrination is. Now, are we achieving victories here and there? Yeah, a little bit. There's a video out there. I'm not going to play it. The trans protesters drowned out by Chants of USA at a recent TPUSA event in Minnesota. Yeah, okay. Is that going to last? I don't know. But I want to play this because Brigitte Gabriel, and look, you know something. I know her history. I know exactly. Look, you could say, I know Brigitte Gabriel's history. I know all the facts that there are to know about her. And it does not dilute anything in my eyes. It doesn't dilute the message. And the folks who know, if you know, you know. If you don't know, it doesn't matter to me. Because I was taken to the cleaners back 15 years ago. Or not taken to, I was like harassed beyond any belief that you can imagine by in her words, an enemy of Brigitte, a lawyer out of Michigan, who claimed to be on the side of good, on the side of conservative. She was a conservative lawyer. I know some of the people, radio talk show hosts, who had her on to talk about, you know, the scourge of Islam, but don't listen to her. It's like, okay, now it's like, shut up. Again, because as I said in the beginning, I'm done. No filter, nothing. I'm done. But listen to this. And then I'm going to kind of wrap it up with the where we're looking at here with where we're at in terms of how bad things are and what we need to do. So let's go to, this would be, Eric the Tech, do you see this? Where is it? This would be. Do you see it, Eric the Tech? This is Brigitte Gabriel. Video 6. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Because the reason this is important, too, is the when this was exposed back in when the agenda, thank you, by the way, here, when the agenda was really exposed and laid out to the American people, at least a subset of the American people, it was laughed at. It was just a bunch of people said, no, this can't happen. And you remember the Holy Land Foundation case and the Council on American Islamic Relations. Well, I'll tell you what, let's let Brigitte explain this. This is a little over 5 minutes, but it's very important to really understand. Here's cut 6. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Brigitte Gabriel. I am holding in my hand the Muslim Brotherhood Plan for North America, written in 5/22/1991. This is their plan, titled مذكرة تفسيرية للهدف الاستراتيجي العام في أمريكا الشمالية. This is about their explanation on how they're going to take over the West, their 100-year plan to infiltrate and dominate the West and establish an Islamic government on earth. This plan was presented as evidence in the Holy Land Foundation trial, the largest terrorism trial ever in the history of the United States, where our government handed down 108 guilty verdicts to Muslim Americans and Muslim organizations in America, raising money in the United States and sending it overseas to support terrorist activity overseas. And I'm going to read you a paragraph about their intention in the United States and how they describe their work. Number four of the paragraph is titled Understanding the Role of the Muslim Brother in North America. And it says, the process of settlement is a civilization jihadist process with all the word means. The Ikhwan, which is the Arabic word for brothers, must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers so that it is eliminated and Allah's religion is made victorious over all other religion. As you can see, they don't mince words. They don't beat around the bush. They tell you exactly what they want to do. They go in detail in this booklet talking about how they are going to implement their plan and the organizations that they had set up in the United States in order for them to advance their plan in America.
This is important.
And here are the names of some of the organizations. They give the names of 29 organizations set up in America to do that. So I'm going to read you some of the names. ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America. If the name sounds familiar, it's because ISNA used to be advisors to President Obama about Middle East policy. So now you understand where signing the nuclear deal with Iran came from and why Obama was all over himself trying to appeal to the Iranian regime, even them sending them pallets of cash in the middle of the night on an airplane, landing in an airport in the middle of the night, millions and billions of our tax dollars. Number two on the list is the MSA, the Muslim Student Association. The Muslim Student Association has chapters all over American universities. So today when you are watching all these demonstrators on our American universities screaming death to the Jews, we hate the Jews, from the river to the sea, Gaza will be free or Palestine will be free. Now you understand where that is coming from. Number eight on the list is the North American Islamic Trust. The North American Islamic Trust owns 90% of mosques in the United States.
Pause that if you can, if you don't mind. So I just want to tell everyone, I did publish and hand it to the FBI. I'm not going to say several. Three specific reports. One was about Islamberg at the base of the Catskill Mountains, run by Sheikh Mubarak Ali Jilani, who then published in his newspaper what one agent told me was a fatwa against me. And wouldn't you know it, just a little time after that. And he told me too. He said, you know, we're not going to help you, but you might want to think about getting better security. Now, this is 15 years ago. And because he did show me the newspaper that had the religious statement by Jilani. And Jilani was the guy, in case that name rings a bell or doesn't, to give you some perspective. He was a guy in Pakistan, this Muslim sheikh, cleric, whatever you want to call him, who was meeting with Daniel Pearl from the Wall Street Journal, I believe. And Pearl then turns up missing his head, and it was horrible. But of course, the FBI said, no, that was just coincidence. Jelani wasn't responsible for that. I'm not going to comment on that except to say, wow, what a coincidence that is. But then a couple of weeks later, you know, my car explodes. So is that coincidental? Look, I don't believe in coincidences, but the fact is, in each of these cases, she mentioned two things: the students of the universities and the money, the students of the university, the infiltration into the universities, They have hooked up with the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America. The Muslims have these organizations hooked up with the DSA, and they're influencing Congress. They're influencing our Senate. They're influencing not just at the federal level, but also at the state level, state levels, plural, as well as even the local community levels. And you wonder about this mass migration, the opening of our southern border by Biden. Well, if you look through the lens of Obama, what he was trying to do, and Obama, if you just kind of push Biden aside in your mind and think Obama, his agenda, and others who converted to Islam, now I'm telling you, there are others, hey, John Brennan, reportedly. But Brennan also voted for a communist back in the 1980 election. So you start looking at who's befriending who and what they're doing in our universities and our colleges. And this is one thing that you cannot, oh my goodness, you cannot touch this, because we have to indoctrinate an entire generation. So it's the same. The DSA is the same as the Muslim ideology. And hey, the DSA will use the Muslims, and Muslims will use the DSA to achieve our end goals. But at the end, people, both sides are going to be expendable. And in this case, the DSA, just the mere socialists using the Muslims to get elected, the members of the DSA will be expendable. As well, of course, we have, I shouldn't have to say this, but anyone who doesn't adapt and adhere to the ideology will be killed. So that's why, too, when you look at somebody like Charlie Kirk at these universities saying, hey, go back to the Bible, follow the biblical teachings. Gee, do you think that was pretty cutting to their agenda? Of course it was. And then the other part that she mentioned, follow the money. Who's funding all of these? I see a lot of overlap between the Democratic Socialists of America, you know, the squad members, Ilhan Omar, to their campaign coffers. A lot of overlap between the Islamic sects as well as the socialists. And yes, to answer, because people will be quick, whoa, wait a second. You know, it's the Jews that are funding this. Yeah, there is money coming from Israel. But is that coming from the Jews of the Bible? I don't know. But is there money coming from the Mossad operations, the black ops of Mossad into these? Absolutely. Is that an indictment of every Jew on the planet? No, it's not. Just like I'm saying with respect to the CIA, is that an indictment of every man, woman, and child here in the U.S.? You know, do they agree? No. Understand, though, it's so pervasive now. It's going to be hard as hell to stop this or to even turn this around. So the bottom line to all this, I don't think this can be turned around. Unless we need more than just the revival. We desperately need the revival. That has to be present. But we can't have prayer without action. We can't have, we can appeal to God. I have a small flag, an appeal to heaven. Okay. I understand that. But how bad does it have to get? How bad does it have to get? Because we already let this go this far. And think about this. These pink-haired, blue-haired, trans, furry, loving, perverse idiots walking around on campuses and on the street. They're so far gone, indoctrinated, that... Do they understand? Do they not? They don't understand that their ultimate end is death, both in the physical and spiritually. So You can take that down. That's fine. And folks, I would urge, look, that's just, I think, half of the video. There's a lot of valuable information to that. But you see, when you take the fight to the campuses, you make yourself a target. When you take the fight to certain areas, you make yourself a target. And we don't have enough. I'm going to tell you right now, we don't have enough people standing up and saying, you know what, this is wrong. And because we're too comfortable with the safety and security of our own place. Now, with respect to the migration or the invasion, it's not migration, but the invasion. Think about what happened with Obama. Think about what happened with Biden. But here's the other part. It's not limited to party. It's not limited to person. Belief is the driver of action. It involves lining one's pockets, because there are deep pockets funding this, the UN being one, other countries being a source, and even our own black money ops funnels this, creates this. To the extent where, here's where we're at, just Exhibit A. This is Video 7. And then we'll go into a little bit of detail on this, because this is relevant and will get us to a certain point where we can wrap it up and say, okay, now, yeah, I get it. And I think we have to, I think the picture painted here is pretty dire, and we have to do some things. And what are those things? So we'll get to that point, but here's cut 7.
Let's take Ilhan Omar as an example, okay? She comes from a family, and they call her a refugee who came from Somalia, right? They call her a refugee. Her family were the governing party, the Marxist Islamist government in Somalia, who were overthrown and then fled. Now, technically, that makes her a refugee, but she wasn't fleeing oppression, or rather, her family weren't fleeing oppression. They were fleeing justice. Their own people holding them to account for the dictatorship that they had established. So you have people like the Omar family, and what do? Do they come to America and see America and go, okay, this is pretty cool, they're not oppressing each other, let's be part of this? No, they go, hey, how can we oppress them? You know, how can we bring Marxism to America? That's the thought process, and it may be a passive thought process, but it's the thought process. Let's take Ilhan Omar as an example.
Okay. All right. So you just heard that. Now, what I want to do is just, again, slightly drill down into something flashed on my screen there. I wasn't sure what it was. So I want to drill down just a little bit further into this. So if you could, Eric the Tech, if you can put up graphic, this is page or image 5. And then we'll switch to image 6 right afterwards. Let's take a look at this a little bit closer. Now, consider this is a member of the House of Representatives of the United States of America. Here's a woman whose father, Nur Omar Mohammed, was a colonel in Syed Bear's Salami, might as well be, Somali army during the 1970s, 1980s, Ogaden War. Now, Bear's regime aligned with the Soviets at the time. You have to go back, and again, this is not Russia. This is the Soviet Union as it existed and their ideology at the time. There it is right there. So they adopted Marxist-Leninist scientific socialism. That's what they called it. Now, Mohammed served under Bear during the 87-89 genocide. Responsible for the murdering of some 250,000 people, roughly. Now, this history raises some questions about Omar's family ties to authoritarianism and mass atrocities. And on the screen there is this graphic that Omar spent the first 10 years of her life as a member of a family that owed its livelihood to the regime of Mohammed Bear. Her family is described as civil servants and educators, all dependents on the regime and executing its orders. So you have in our leader, in a position of leadership, the daughter of a guy who, well, was responsible for a mass genocide. Now, her father was a teacher trainer, as you can see there. Omar has never explained exactly what that position entailed. In a revolutionary communist regime, a teacher trainer is the political commissar who trains teachers on how to indoctrinate children. And I would add this. It's not just children like toddlers. It is also pervasive in the universities' levels of higher education. So you go back to Brigitte Gabriel and think, okay, follow the money. And also the environment in which they're gaining a stronghold. And you can see why Charlie Kirk was such a threat, and others who come after him will be such a threat. You can see why, too, if you look at the landscape, why the teachers' union, why the Department of Education, they're important cogs in this wheel of both funding and indoctrination. They can't lose those. So the Omar's family, by the way, worked for Barr, the leader of the Revolutionary Socialist Party. And Barr himself was a Leninist who attempted to merge the Quranic dictates with those of Karl Marx. And that's what's happening here. And that is what's happening if you look at specifically at Minnesota, if you look at even parts of Wisconsin, if you look at other places like Michigan, that's what's happening. This is the playbook. I'm telling you right now, this is a playbook. So when you look at Ilhan Omar, what are you seeing? Are you seeing somebody that was raised in the born in poverty and raised in poverty and came to America as a refugee? No, and hell no. She is an operative, both an Islamic operative, but also a Marxist. Should she be in the House of Representatives? Well, gee whiz. She was voted in, right? So, but we can't talk about, for example, we can't talk about the voting machines. We can't talk about the voter fraud, because if we do, that's, you know, election denial. You can't do that. It's not just about votes. It's about the ideologies. Think bigger. Again, it's not just about the escalator at the UN. It's about the lack of response by the personal protection detail. We could talk all day long about, you know, isn't that something? You know, they turned off the escalator. Gee, just a, you know, kind of jab Trump, right? No. I mean, maybe, but I wouldn't be so sure of that. There's more to things that, again, it would be easy for all of us just to say, yeah, these things do happen, and to go with the majority of the people who will go back on YouTube and, say, hey, I'm back on YouTube. No longer, it's a win. No longer are we being censored. No longer. Only to find out, see how that goes for you. And if you don't believe me, then you don't have to believe me, but if you don't believe how bad things are right now and getting right now, shall we talk about California just briefly? How many of you out there have heard of Senate Bill 771? Right now it's sitting on the desk of Gavin Newsom to be signed. This was passed. And let me tell you something, okay? You can look this up. I'll provide the link in the show notes. You can look up the text of the bill. If you don't believe this, you can look it up. And if you think it's bad now, the censorship is bad now, this is what happened. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll just go to video 12. Cut 12. It's 2 minutes long. Watch this, but listen to what is being said. Here it is.
Something else happened around free speech. Something nobody seems to be talking about happening in the background while none of us are paying attention. The bluest state in the country, California, just passed the most censorious bill ever to be introduced in this country. SB 771, passing the assembly on September 10th, 10 days ago. Then on September 16th, passing the Senate completely under our noses, which means right now all that stands between complete statewide government censorship is Gavin Newsom's signature. Now, am I exaggerating about how bad this bill is? No, I am not. Here is the actual bill. You can pull this up yourself on the state's website. The bill's called SB 771. It's called Personal Rights, Liability, Social Media Platforms. In Section 2, Title 23 of the bill, it defines the penalties for breaking this new California law. If you post something on social media, anywhere online, that the state of California, deems to be hateful, there's a penalty for that reckless violation, a civil penalty of up to $500,000. For an intentional, knowing, or willful violation, a civil penalty of up to $1 million. That is the definition of the state controlling speech, folks, not what Trump just did. We don't like what the FCC chairman happened to say on Benny Johnson's show, but there's a huge difference between that and real government censorship. And what type of speech is California trying to police here? Well, let's read from the bill. It says, this bill protects against online harassment, particularly when directed at historically marginalized groups. Which means what? If you were to, I don't know, point out who the Kavanaugh assassin is, which we all just learned about this morning in this new court filing, if you were to say who that person is, would you be fined $500,000? Pretty frightening. All of this happening in the midst of the media and Democrats, Barack Obama, Kamala Harris, making hay out of Trump trying to attack the First Amendment. Meanwhile, the state of California is actively passing UK-style laws that will fine you for saying the wrong thing. Pretty wild. And this bill is completely done, folks. It's passed in the House. It's passed in the Senate. All that's left is Gavin Newsom signing it into law.
So there it is. I did check on the text of the bill, and there you can read it for yourself. I mean, there's nothing that has been overstated or understated about the bill. It's just factual. And here we are. So are we, you can see, again, this is part of the DSA, part of the Marxist ideology. And you can see this, and they are fixing, you can see how they're attempting, they meaning the global apparatus, the infected, the body politic, our society, having been infected by this, you can see where all of this is headed. And it's not a good place. And we are not going to stop it unless we act, unless we educate, unless we really get out there and say, okay, no, no more. And I was going to show you video after video after video. There was one video, and I don't think I grabbed it. So there was this one video, of a citizen of a specific town objecting about a street being named after the Islamic terrorist, basically. And the mayor of the town looked at the man who said, look, I'm a Christian. This offends me deeply. And the bottom line, the mayor of the town, and you can find this on social media, I'm sure you can find it posted at different places. Mayor of the town says, I don't want you in my town. Get the hell out of this town. Get the hell out of here. Move. That's where we're at. How do you fight that? Do you fight that through being meek? No. Do you fight? No. There's only one way to fight that, and that's where we're headed. Let me, can you fight that through the courts? This is really important because this does put a period at the end of the paragraph, I guess. This is Peter Navarro today breaking down the current DC judicial system. This is the same system that put him in prison. This is cut 16 in the show notes. I want to move to this. We're going to run out of time. So let's just play this. And then on the other side of this, we'll wrap this up. And I do want to give a taste for tomorrow because there's more to this. And if we take it one step deeper, we can actually see the gears working. We can actually see who the players are, who we have to focus upon, where the money's coming from, and then have a better sense of the course of action we need to take. But right now we are in the soup big time. And you know what? Revival again is great. I'm all for that. We need that. We have to fight righteously. But you know what? We cannot bury our heads in the sand and say, you know what? We'll get over this, simply by this great revival. I believe that's an integral part of this, but it can't be the only part. And I speak from the heart because I don't want to see, you know where I'm coming. I just don't want to see bad things happen. But I don't want to run from something that we need to address today so it doesn't metastasize further and become a bigger problem tomorrow. Here's cut 16, important and related to all of this, because they're screwing with the crime statistics, they're screwing with our judiciary, there's black robe tyrants, you heard about the attempted assassination of Kavanaugh. Well, what's that about? Well, okay, there was obviously that's a trans attempt. It was done by a trans, right? By a tranny, or attempted by a tranny. Well, so what? That movement is co-opted. Understand, those are just chess pieces. Those people with the purple hair and the, or guys being girls, girls being guys, they're just chess pieces. They're pawns. That's all they are. But here's the rot at this level. Peter Navarro is going to talk about, and then apply that to pretty much all of the, if you will, the circuit courts all across the U.S. But here it is. Here's cut 16.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, there's no mitigating. They should have been charged, but they didn't. I tried to get discovery to figure out why. I tried to get discovery about who ordered my leg irons arrest, how far up the chain it went. Chris Wray over to, I don't know, Matt Graves, maybe up to Merrick Garland. We needed to know this to argue selective prosecution. They wouldn't let us do that. They wouldn't let some of our witnesses come in. We had somebody who, and then the worst part is this whole notion of they just ruled that I couldn't argue executive privilege. That was my defense, but I couldn't argue it. And we got the judge to hold what's called an evidentiary hearing, and for over the course of almost an hour, I established on five different occasions the privilege had been invoked. And then at the end of that, he goes, well, wasn't good enough. And so by that, it's like I couldn't argue the case. And then the jury, Steve, this is like crazy stuff, right? You saw this. I'm in voir dire, right? And I'm knowing that 95% of the jurors, because they're drawn from the voter pool, voted for Joe Biden, right? And some of these jurors, prospective jurors, are saying, well, I don't like Trump. And then the judge will say, do you think you could be objective? And they go, oh, yes, I can be objective. Okay, you're on the jury. And the one or two people we had that looked like they might be fair, the prosecutors understood it as well. So they were gone. And so this was the same.
Can you pause that for a second? Excuse me. About that. If you've ever been involved in the court system and you had to pick a jury, whether for yourself or whether you're part of the process of selecting a jury, just imagine this. Imagine if one of the qualifying questions or disqualifying questions is, can you accept Christian or do you, are you a Christian or do you accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior or whatever? And they're all Marxist or they're all Muslim. Pick whatever you want to pick from. So obviously you cannot get a fair trial if they all say no, 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 and no. But yet our judicial system, especially in the D.C. court venue, regardless regardless of the jurisdiction within the court system in D.C., is contaminated. There's no way that you can get a fair trial. Because why? Because of the population density of the perverse ideologues, I guess would be the way to say it, who lived there. So there's no way that he could have got a fair trial. Zero. And then on top of that, you throw in the Marxist-minded judges. Okay, the black-robed tyrants. And remember, if you're a judge, for example, boy, you'd be having dreams of being on the Supreme Court. Maybe, depending on your age and what you're thinking. But those are the kind of judges you're talking about. So they've got maybe their eye on a higher judgeship or the Supreme Court pick. Oh, my gosh, that'd be fabulous. So the problem, again, while people talk about the surface level, the surface area problems that we have, understanding the mechanics of the or the drivers of action, belief, their beliefs drive their actions. And we know that belief is a driver of action. Understand, folks, how deep this is. It's not something that we can fix easily, because this is the result of century of indoctrination, that we must be tolerant, that we must be passive. That's where we're at. Can we vote our way out of it? No. And if we could, would they let us? Doubtful. Can we pray our way out of it? Yeah, that's a great idea. But is that a strategy? It should be the backbone of one. So I guess my message today, while we're looking at certain things take place, I think a lot of us miss the opportunity to just sit quietly and say, wait a second. What we're being shown, the escalator, the server farm, the fact that Ryan Ruth was, he was on trial and he was found. Oh, yeah, he tried to stab himself in the neck and, you know, okay. He did, by the way. But do we take all of these at face value, or do we look at the deeper rooted problems? And that's kind of what I'm about. Where I am at today. And I'm going to speak for the platform. But I personally, I'm running out of runway. I don't know how much time I've got. But I know this. I would be doing my grandchildren a disservice if I would self-censor like many conservatives choose to do. Why? For clicks, for visibility, for the ability to say, hey, I got 100,000 followers. And so what? Am I tracking here? Did I make sense? I mean, I'm asking, did I make sense? Don't take. Does it make sense that the Secret Service opened an investigation into a server? Wait a second. Why? Why? Ask questions. Think a little bit deeper. That's my two cents. Think a little bit deeper. And I have to check with Eric about tomorrow, but I'd like to lay this out a little bit quicker and more cohesive tomorrow. But I believe right now we are in a position, we're in a state. It's a hinge moment in time. We only have a certain amount of time left that we must act. And we must be very decisive in how we do things. But we cannot tolerate what we've tolerated before. Are we going to get our hands dirty? I think we're going to have to.